Thanks, buddy. So Ecclesiastes chapter 9, and as you think about this passage, you know, we kind of started this book and we spent kind of some time in the last 8 chapters, and it's, you know, it's been like sucker punch after sucker punch after sucker punch, where the author's kind of like, life is meaningless and everything's horrible and, you know, figure it out. And it kind of comes to this passage and it's like, oh, but by the way, eat and drink and be merry and enjoy relationships. And you're like, well, this is out of left field, right? You ever start your week thinking about changing things in your life? Maybe some things like, this week is just going to be different. I'm going to do this. I'm going to accomplish that. I'm going to be more consistent in this. I'm going to stop doing this. And then Monday kind of rolls around and the week gets going. Tuesday hits and you are into the weekly rhythm. Wednesday comes and it's hump day and you're tired already and ready for the week to be over. You wake up Thursday and you're just like, one more day till Friday. And then Friday hits and it's the weekend. And then the weekend is like your time, right? Or at least your kids' time if you have kids, right? But your family's doing things together mostly. And then Sunday hits again and you come to the gathering and you think, I should have worked out all that stuff I was thinking about last Sunday. And maybe it's not even spiritual things that you want to shift in life, but it's maybe your work or where you're headed in life, or you're working on your marriage, your friendships, or loving your kids, or your diet, or your exercise, or your finances. I'm not sure about you, but in my life, this is a pretty normal week for me. It's like, I should do this, I should do that. And then weekends, you're like, I didn't do any of that. And it's an endless kind of stream of life that happens, right? Like you have work, you have meetings, rides for kids, sporting events, school. And by the time you end your day, you plop yourself on the couch to relax, maybe even just a little bit. And maybe it's late and you know you should probably go to bed, but you still sit on the couch. And like a very mature adult, you like grab a snack and you grab a drink and you turn on that like favorite show of yours that you've been like trying to finish, like the same episode, but you keep falling asleep like before it's over, right? And is this anybody else's life besides my own, right? And when you wake up on the couch, it's midnight and you're like debating if it's even worth going up to bed or not, or if you should just like stay on the couch and fall asleep. And then before you know it, the alarm clock's going off and it starts all over again. This is kind of the story of Ecclesiastes. You know, all the dreams of your life, the plans and the change and the hopes, it kind of get lost, I think, kind of get muddled in the daily routines. Like we don't have space often to think about, to process or to plan the things that you actually want to shift in your life. And this is kind of becomes a way of life, actually, for us. It's just what we do. Now, maybe some of you are like super disciplined. You go to bed early. You get up early, right? Everything's like ordered and your work and all your dreams are coming true and nothing's a matter. And it's awesome life for you, like good for you. I was thinking the other night, Todd sent me a text or email like really early in the morning. And I thought to myself, you know, Todd always sends me stuff really early in the morning. And I always send stuff to Todd really late at night. And so when Todd wakes up in the morning, he always gets something from me. And when I wake up in the morning, he always gets something from him. But that's just like how we operate. And wherever you find yourself kind of in the monotony of life, or if you're like the superhero role, right, like I've got it all together, there's something about your home, your house, where you find safety, relaxation, rest from the week. Like you're ever at work and you're like, I just can't wait to get home. Some of you work from home and you're like, man, I just can't wait to get out of here, right? But there's something about your home, that feeling towards the end of the day where you just want to get there. The place where you can put your pajamas on at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, be yourself, be at peace. Home is like a deep breath amidst the heavy breathing of the week, if you will. And even if home is a little bit stressful, it's okay because it's home. Our homes have become kind of an interesting place for many of us. You ever have somebody come to your house like unannounced? Like there's a knock on the door, right? And you're all kind of sitting around. You're like, who's here, right? You wonder what kind of like psycho just shows up at your house like unannounced, right? And there's like this panic that happens. You're like, my house is a disaster. Who is it? Did you invite somebody? Did I invite? Like, I don't remember. And it's this kind of sign that like our house actually is a refuge for us, but often not a lot of other people. It's our space and they're interrupting it. Now, I realize many of you have opened your home to a lot of the things that we do with the church. Doug and Dara have opened their house like 57 times in like the last week to youth and to all sorts of stuff, so thank you. They're very hospitable. But for many of us, home is like a fortress. Home is like a refuge, an escape, a safety net, a peace where you can like dance with your kids and there's no judgment. Nobody's looking at you. It can be chaos and there's no judgment. You can wear your clothes that you wouldn't be caught dead out in public in, and it's okay. Where you can fart and burp with no excuse me's, but with laughter, like deep belly laughter with your children. It's the private place of your life. It's the retreat away from life. And at some level, it should be that. But as the years kind of move on, you can look back on them. And besides hosting maybe for holidays, some events for church or some things for your family, our home is often not a place where people come to visit. Or maybe your neighbor doesn't know that they're welcome. Or a place where people can just come hang out. Home has become more of a fortress rather than maybe a resort for other people to relax in for many of us. Now, let's not get carried away, okay? Like, I believe you need space for your family. You need that space. It's not like just leave the door open 24/7. You need space, you need rest, you need relax with your own family. But is our home more of a retreat away from life than it is inviting people into life with us? Can it be both? Can we hold the tension of personal space and party place, if you will? Can it be both my place and their place? Can it be a place of rest and mission? I think sometimes when we talk about this, it seems a little bit overwhelming to kind of hold our home both as a place of rest and solitude and peace, and also a place where strangers become friends and hopefully eventually family. You know, the type that like come to your house and they don't ask if they can have a drink, they just go get the drink, right? They open your fridge, they find whatever they want, they get the snack on their own. I like people like that. When you come to my house, you're welcome to do that. And I think there's this idea, this tension that can seem really daunting at times when our home is both a refuge but also a place for others. Most of our lives, I think, are kind of lived in the ordinary, the mundane, yet also your lives are full of stress and worry and fears and whatever else you want to fill in the blank there. So inviting someone or other people, other than maybe your family, your own family, into your home creates this space where you begin to think more about what people think about what? Your home? You? You worry about your decorations, your cleanliness, the color of the paint, the furniture that's old and falling apart because of all the wear and tear and how outdated everything is in your house and what you're cooking for dinner. And you're hoping that they don't open that one closet or that one drawer and see who you really are, right, as everything falls out onto them. But what if I was to tell you that this morning, our passage this morning could ease that tension? Where you could use simple things like your home, like a meal, things that you do all the time to be hospitable to people and to show them and to share with them the love of Jesus Christ. That your dreams about life, about changing and shifting things in life and work and everything in between can be more simple than we make it out to be. So look with me in Ecclesiastes chapter 9. The author has just spent 8 chapters just telling you all the stuff that's meaningless. And then he makes this switch. And if you remember, the key to Ecclesiastes is chapter 12, verse 13, which says what? Fear God, keep his commands, and this will make you whole. And so we start with that, and what he's trying to do is to get this stuff in the last 8 chapters that doesn't matter, kind of out of us, if you will. The things that don't matter, the meaningless stuff of life that we worry about, the author is saying, stop worrying about that stuff. It doesn't matter. And allow God to get the meaningful things into us. He's trying to give us depth in our life and get rid of the distractions in our life. He wants us to be aware of God's presence wherever we are and whoever we're with, and to obey his commands, his way of life, so that we can be whole in him. So here in chapter 9, the author starts in verse 7 and says, go eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already approved what you do. I find it fascinating that we have seen him say most of life is meaningless, except for a few things. And he kind of reiterates this passage a few times in Ecclesiastes. But the few things that he says are not meaningless are God, people, family, and meals. Interesting. And he does it several times through the book, and you can kind of picture the scene of some people sitting at a table about to enjoy a meal. Eat, drink with joy and a merry heart. God has already approved it. In other words, he created these moments, the food, he created the people around the table, the emotions, the conversations that's going to be had. And so enjoy it. This is a pretty massive shift for the author to talk like this about a meal. Something as simple as a meal can bring you joy and a merry heart. In our class this morning, I said, you know, what happens when you sit down to a meal? And Billy said something to the effect of like, it's good, like you want to eat. Like most people like want to eat good food, and it brings like joy to your life when there's something good placed in front of you to eat. So this is a moment in this book. And he starts with this word, go. Most of us would just skip over that word. And it's a verb. And in the Hebrew, it's the word halak, which primarily means to walk. And it's used over 90 times in the Old Testament to describe physical movement from one place to another. And it's also often used to describe one's way of life in accordance with God's commands, which, by the way, if you obey his commands, it does what? Makes you whole. So the author's not just saying, eat and drink in your home by yourself and be joyful and merry. I don't think he's saying that can't happen. But the purpose here is that there is a movement of people towards something and someone, and that something is a meal, and that someone is the people around you. So they're moving somewhere to be with someone. Go with someone or to someone, or let people go to you to share a meal. So this call here is to go. Now let me turn your attention to Matthew 28, where Jesus uses the same word, but in the Greek, it's actually a word that is kind of transitions from go to search. That word go in Matthew 28 is the word search. In other words, when he says go make disciples, he's basically saying go search for disciples. Go find them. Like go look for them. And he sends you out. So in Ecclesiastes, it's go, move from your home, like as a way of life, and eat with people. In Matthew 28, it's go, search for people who need Jesus. Now, if you were to combine these things, could we say that one of the primary ways that we can go is to invite people in the room to search for people who need relationships, both with you and with Jesus? And one of the simplest ways to bring people together is through a meal, through food. When we think of discipleship and relationship in the church, I think we often think about Sunday morning, Bible studies, life groups, etc. And all those things are really wonderful. But could it be possible that actually most disciple making does not happen here on Sunday morning, But more often than not, it happens in your kitchen, in your living room, and around your dining room table. That's where most discipleship is had. Like, I can look out into this room and go, I did marriage counseling with you, I've talked with you about this in life, and guess what? It was not here. It was in my home. It was around a table or on the couch. And so when we look back on the meals of Jesus, there's one that stands out. If you want to turn there, you're welcome to. It's in Luke chapter 7. Jesus has been invited to one of the Pharisees' houses, if you remember this story. And he's invited there to eat. Now, first, you have to see that Jesus didn't reject going to the Pharisees' house. He went, even though he knew that this was probably going to be a trap to catch him in something. And so there's a going. Luke 19 says that Jesus says, I came to seek and to save the lost. That means he went, he goes to places. So here they are reclining at the table. And in these times, people could have seen into the house that Jesus was there eating with the Pharisees. It's not like our house when we have people over. We like shut the curtains and close everything up. Not anybody to see inside, right? Here you can see inside. And there's a woman who hears that Jesus is there, and so she goes. She is searching for Jesus. Sometimes people, I think, are searching for the church, but too often we're all locked up in our house. And sometimes the church is searching for those that don't yet believe, and they're locked up in their houses. But this woman, a prostitute most likely, is searching to find Jesus. And she's going to find Jesus. So she goes into the house, right? That's the knock on the door when you're not expecting somebody, right? Now think about this. Jesus is at a Pharisee's house and a prostitute walks in. What could Jesus assume? Oh, what are you doing tonight? Right? He doesn't. And this prostitute walks in and kneels at Jesus' feet and begins to weep. Her tears onto Jesus' feet to clean them, wipes them with her hair, and then begins to anoint his feet with oil and kisses. It's kind of a bizarre scene if you really like think about it. Pharisee's house, Jesus eating a meal, a prostitute washing his feet. It's just kind of weird. Now, let me ask you this. How many of you, you know, when you're spouse or child gets home from work or their sporting event, you're like, hey, come on in, take off your shoes, and let me clean your feet for you. Most of us are like, feet, gross, unless you're weird, okay? So feet are kind of gross, but here, it's not. And the Pharisee says to Jesus, if you knew who this woman was, you would not allow her to do what she's doing. So the question then is, why does he? Why does he allow it to happen? Why does he allow this prostitute to do this to him? Especially around a meal. Honestly, it's kind of weird. It's kind of awkward. But Jesus is all about disrupting social situations. He loves it. I think he, like, it's great for him. I'm not sure many of us deal with interruption or inconvenience very well. I know I don't at times. The last several weeks, Sunday morning, I would come home and like, we have an iPad that runs this, the computer that runs that, and I teach off an iPad. There's three things, right? And my kids often use them through the week, which means that they're not charged, I can't find the charger, and I don't know where any of them are. So when I come home and I'm like, I become like enraged. Anybody have these moments, right? You get so really angry and you just start yelling, right? And kids are like, I thought we were gonna go worship Jesus later, right? Like they're scared, right? And that's an inconvenience. And it shows more about what's going on in my heart than it does about stupid technology, right? But we don't like inconvenience. We don't like interruption in our life. And so Jesus teaches them this parable about this moneylender, and he turns to Simon and he says, when I came into your house, you gave me no water for my feet. She's cleaned them with her tears. You gave me no kiss, yet she has. You didn't anoint my head with oil, yet she has. You see, church, when people sit around a meal with Jesus or the people of Jesus, it becomes more than just food and drink. It becomes a place where people are met, where people have a name, they have a face, they have a story. The meal is just a way to get people to go, to search, to move. And a foot washing in the Old Testament is very significant. Very significant. It's a sign of hospitality to say that you are welcome here, to take your shoes off, take your socks off, and enter into a space that is welcoming, that is holy, that is sacred, and free for you to be you. Has anybody seen the movie Jesus Revolution? There's a scene, Chuck Smith, played by Kelsey Grammer. He's a pastor in the hippie movement of the 60s and 70s. And there's all these hippies that start coming to his church. And the regular church attenders, you people, right, the elders, they get their panties in a twist and they meet with him in his office. And they tell them that those people out there, they are making the church folk uncomfortable. And Pastor Chuck says, shouldn't we be? Like, isn't that like what we should be doing? And he says that one of the elders says, they're coming in here and they're wearing halter tops and their feet barefoot and they're dirty and they're getting our new shag carpet gross. That's what they said. And there's this moment you could see on the pastor's face of like, and? And? And these elders tell the pastor that if he doesn't stop inviting them to come, they're going to lose the contributing members of the church. And the scene ends with this elder saying them, do you hear us? And Chuck Smith says, loud and clear. I hear you loud and clear. Scene switches. And the next scene is this camera rolling down the sidewalk of all these hippies, barefooted hippies, on the sidewalk waiting to get into the doors of the church. And as the elders approach in their cars, they're like, what the heck is going on here? We thought, you know, and they're all up in a twist. And as the elders walk up and they come to the front door of the church, Chuck Smith is sitting there washing all of their feet before they enter the church. Powerful. In other words, what he's saying is, you're welcome here. This is a hospitable place. It's a sign of intimacy and love and kindness and acceptance. And so the washing of Jesus' feet was a sign of hospitality. Not to the woman's house, because it wasn't her house, but it was a sign of the hospitality of Jesus' heart to come. Like, you're welcome here into her life. In Revelation 22, it says, the Spirit and the bride say, come. And it says, and let the one who hears say, come. Let the one who's thirsty come. And let the one who wishes to take the free gift of the water of life come. Back to Ecclesiastes 9, let me show you what I mean. The author says, go. Search, live a life outside of your home or invite people into your home. Eat bread, which was a staple food in Israel, and it symbolized their daily need for God's provision. You can see that in Psalm 23, right, where it says, give me today my what? Daily bread. Manna was given in the wilderness. Jesus broke bread with his disciples. Bread was in religious services, reminded people of provision, hospitality. And today we even refer to God's word as what? The bread. Right? And so he says, eat bread with joy. Now, this word joy in the Hebrew conveys a state of happiness or celebration. The word here is often used in worship and the blessing of God, and it's both an internal state of joy and an external expression of joy through your way of life, through your actions, through your celebrations. And so what he's saying is, as you sit around the table, invite people into not just a meal, but a space where both their internal and external needs can be met, where their physical and spiritual needs can be nourished. Don't just be hospitable with your home, but be hospitable with your heart. Then he says, drink wine with a merry heart. That word merry is the word tov, which means good in Hebrew. Now, if you trace that word back through the Bible, you would see that that word is often in reference to God's goodness, the character of God. But if you were to keep tracing it back to the story of creation, it would mean perfection and harmony. And after God creates something, he says what? It is good. It is good. In other words, he's approved it all. And so in this story, in this passage, he's saying he's approved it. Eat, drink. It's good in so many ways that you need. Not just physically, but maybe spiritually or emotionally or mentally. And then in the story of Luke chapter 7, the Pharisees came to eat a meal with Jesus to maybe trap him in something, and there was nothing good there. They weren't trying to worship Jesus. For them, it was a meal, but for the prostitute, it was more than a meal. She didn't actually care about the food. She wanted Jesus. She wanted his goodness and his blessing and his forgiveness. She didn't even eat any of the food, but she deeply ate from the bread of life, who is Jesus Christ. I think much of our Christian life, and even now, what we see portrayed about the church, so even especially online, is churches with grandeur and concerts and everything's excellent and timed and professional and clean, and the sound systems are incredible, the buildings are amazing, the pastor sermons are practiced and perfected, and they look like GQ models. And listen, some of those things are really wonderful and they're great and they've reached a lot of people for the gospel. I'm not saying that. But in our everyday ordinary life, those things are not normal. And when you invite somebody into that, it's like, what has happened? This isn't normal. Most people are not experiencing Jesus actually around any of that stuff. Most people will experience Jesus through you, through your ordinary life, through your work, through your play, through your rest, through your home, the soccer field, the PTO meetings. The question is, is your heart hospitable as well as your home? Is your heart hospitable as well as your home? I think many of us think ordinary moments in our life are nothing really special to people. They need bigger, they need nicer, better food, better experiences, other than, for instance, my cotton candy blue 100-year-old house that needs serious work and the paint is falling off as a painter. It's really great. And we could let all that stop us from having people into our home, from being hospitable to people, along with our four kids and all their schedules and two jobs and demands of life, but we try not to. And listen, I'm not taking a lot of credit here because I'm usually walking in the door about 5 minutes before everybody else has arrived, and Miranda has cleaned and cooked and prepared the house and whatever, and she's really great at it. She's really hospitable. But what does it mean to not just have a hospitable home, but a hospitable heart? You see, church, when the author says, go eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart, what he's asking is, who can join you in those moments? Many of us assume that mission and love and life with people only happens on mission trips and Sunday mornings and events. But when our life, your heart, your home, both become hospitable to the people that are searching, then everywhere you go becomes a place where you can bring peace and joy and love and kindness and forgiveness and repentance and all the things that Jesus is about. If your heart is hospitable, you can do deep work with your spouse, with your kids, with your friends, with your neighbor, with your strangers that come around. And it could happen over a meal. A meal is so much more than food for the body. There's so many ordinary things in our life that can become deeper things. Many small moments that can become hospitable things to those in need. Even you. I believe the church often embraces the big and the beautiful and excellent, and we've forgotten the small and the impactful. Sky Jathani says, we've equated large with legitimate. We've equated large with legitimate. And I believe what the author is getting at here, at this, with the food and the drink and a meal, is so much more than that. It's where the ordinary things in our life meet the extraordinary things of Jesus. We just have to realize that your ordinary life is so important to the gospel mission of Jesus Christ. In the movie, a lot of movie references this morning, Dead Poets Society, one of my favorites. It's a movie about a teacher played by Robin Williams trying to get the most out of his students who are simply just trying to kind of get through school, please their parents, and it's like this uppity-up, like boys' school. And Williams, known as Mr. Keating, who's a bit of a creative with his teaching, takes his students to the halls of where the old pictures are and trophies from the school's past accomplishments are encased in glass. And he asks the boys to take a look at the faces in the pictures from the past. And he tells the students that those in the pictures were once filled with hopes and adventure and dreams. But now, as they had just read a poem, they are in the ground fertilizing daffodils. And as they stand in front of these cases of the past and stare at the faces, anybody seen this movie? Wow, this is shot in the dark here, okay then. He tells these boys to lean in close. And the shot is like 15 boys. They all just kind of like lean in and they're like looking at these pictures. And Mr. Keating is behind them, Robin Williams. And he begins to go this. He says this. He goes, "Carpe. Carpe diem. Seize the day, boys. Make your lives extraordinary." And all the boys' faces are like, what is happening right now? You can also see that they're dialed into what Mr. Keating is saying. Like, they want to believe it. They want to not just do the same thing day in and day out. They want to seize the day. And I think if we're honest, we desire the same thing in our life. And maybe you don't see your lives as extraordinary, but what if you just saw the ordinary things in life and said, those things matter to Jesus. Those things matter to Jesus. The spaces and the moments where you can have not just a hospitable home, but a hospitable heart. And that could change somebody's life. You know, maybe you're sitting here and you're like, man, this is a lot. Like, I barely have space to do what I need to do in my life. But a hospitable heart and home is not a moment. It's a way of life. It's the going. It's the searching. Where it becomes normal. And so maybe the issue is not a hospitable heart and home towards others, but maybe your heart and your home is not hospitable to the things of Jesus as deeply as they should be. Maybe your meals with Jesus are not like the meals he had with his disciples, where he washed their feet and gave them bread and wine. He said, "This is my body broken for you and my blood spilled out for you so that you can have life, life abundantly," or as Ecclesiastes says, "will make your life whole." Maybe the home of your heart is so full, is so distracted, that Jesus has been trying to wash your feet and you're like, nah, nope, like I don't want you touching my feet. Maybe he's been trying to anoint you and you're like, nah, I got it. And there's a coldness there to him. Like the small child, like when you're trying to feed him those vegetables and he's going, today, nope. And maybe the house of your heart needs to be more hospitable to rest in Jesus, or to rest and be hospitable to his forgiveness or his grace, or maybe to allow him to like take the shame and the guilt of your past that you've just been killing yourself over and to separate it from you as far as the east is from the west. Maybe it's allowing time in the home of your heart to allow Jesus to come and sit with you, to share a meal with you so you can share what's up with you. Maybe you're not seeing how Jesus wants to actually enter into the mundane things of your life, the ordinary spaces of your life, not just the problems and the struggles and the joys, but he wants to show you how the ordinary life can be a conduit for him to make your heart hospitable to other people. Romans 15:7 says, "Accept one another, then just as Christ accepted you in order to both bring praise to God." What if your ordinary lives chose to engage in the ordinary moments of our day rather than disengage from them? Like, you ever go to work and you're just like, I can't even, right? We disengage. We're people that disengage. Where Jesus says, engage. Not just with people, but with me. Ecclesiastes 12, 13 again says, fear God. In other words, be aware of his presence all the time in everything. Obey his commands, and this will make you whole. What if our feeling of not being full is not a lack of what we have or look like, but what we're not, that we're not aware of his presence every day? And we're not aware of his presence, it's really difficult to obey his commands and to feel as a whole person. I was talking to somebody the other day, and I read this quote, and I said it to them, and they were like, I feel like kind of bored with my life and faith and with Jesus. And I said, it's not Jesus that's boring, it's you. You're boring, not Jesus. And I think sometimes our hearts, they don't feel full because we're not hospitable to the things of Jesus. So how do we do that? How do we do that? If you were to spend your day being aware of Jesus' presence, it seems a little daunting, doesn't it? Like every moment of your day, like you're like, oh, where's Jesus, right? Let me make it really simple for you. In the beginning, God made plants and animals, and he said that it was what? Good. Do you eat plants and animals? Yeah, most of us do, right? Which means that it's what? Good, right? God said that work was good. Do you go to work every day? Which means that your work is what? This is like lobs, guys. It's good. He worked for six and he rested one. That means rest is what? Good. He gave Adam a woman, relationship, which means that relationships are what? Good. So all you have to do is realize that everything God has given you is what? It's good. And you can become crazy aware of his presence. The problem is that we see what? Work as what? Not good. We see relationships as not good at times. We see rest as not good at times. And so we become disengaged from the presence of God because we don't see that the things that he has given us are good. Just the ordinary, like those are like a couple ordinary things that you do every single day. Now, how do we live this out? Well, you have opportunities every day to be aware of his presence and to open your heart and your home to be hospitable to people. And so think about it this way. Where do you live, work, play, and rest? Four things. Live, work, play, rest. Where do you live? You have a neighborhood with people in it. Do you know them at all? Have they ever been over to your house? Where do you work? Do you know your coworkers? Or is it just like, oh, hey, how you doing? Don't talk to me. Where do you play? What do you like to do? Actually, I think this is a big one because I think a lot of us don't play a whole lot. It's like work. Right? Where do you play? Do you invite people into playing with you? And where do you rest? How do you rest? Do you rest? Where do you live, work, play, and rest? How do you use your heart and the places that you're in those spaces become hospitable to Jesus and to other people? How do you do it? Let me give you just quick hits, right? Where do you live? You live in a home. How can you use your home to be hospitable for the things of Jesus? How do you do that? Try inviting somebody over that you wouldn't normally invite over once a month. Just once a month. Do it for the next 3, 4, 5, 6 months. See what happens. Where do you work? Try having lunch with somebody that maybe you wouldn't normally have lunch with. See what their day's like. See what's going on. Don't sit at your desk by yourself. Some of you are like, I don't like this at all. I'm an introvert, right? Just try it. Where do you play? Like your kids, if you have kids, they're involved in things. Like, do you know their parents? You know who they are? You know their story? How do you rest? We were just on a youth retreat, and I think it was Friday night. I was like, oh, there's puzzles here. And I got a puzzle out. And all of a sudden, everybody's doing this puzzle, right? And they're all of a sudden starting to talk about life and laughing and joking. And like Will would come for like 10 seconds and then bail out and then come back for 10 seconds. And then it was like wild times. And everybody wanted to put what? The last, what? Piece in. Why? Why do you always want to be the person to put the last piece in? I actually have no idea. I literally have no idea. But what happened around that puzzle, we did two of them. One was 500 pieces, one was 1,000. Stories were told. There's a lot of laughter, a lot of bodily fluids happening, right? It was gross, right? Including me, right? And one night, there was a few of us, it was like 12:30 at night. And I'm like, why am I still awake? But it's a moment that showed people's hearts were hospitable to one another. And all it took was a puzzle. So think about how simple it is to be hospitable, to have a hospitable heart and a hospitable place for people to share what's going on in their life and to know Jesus more deeply. Where you live, work, and play, how's your heart and home in those places hospitable to those around you? Amen? God, thanks for a few moments this morning to open your word. I'm grateful for it. I pray that we learn how to take the spaces where we live, work, and play and open our hearts and those spaces to be hospitable to you and to others. I pray that we are a people that want to go searching, to go, to find people, to share a meal with, and open our hearts and our lives both to you and others so that others can do the same. We ask all these things in your name.